Good afternoon. It's 5:06 and 80 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Tanner Boyd. On the show today, Governor Beshear discusses those who are eligible to receive a booster shot in the Commonwealth. Meanwhile, some Kentucky schools are testing new test-to-stay protocols. A Johnson County hospital will be under new ownership soon. And the Kentucky League of Women's Voters is gathering input on redistricting. In sports, a member of Moorhead State Volleyball now has over a dozen OVC honors. Partly cloudy skies tonight with lows around 60. We'll have a look at your region's extended forecast after this news. Governor Andy Beshear set aside some time during his briefing Monday to address federal regulators' latest guidance. Beshear said that adherence with the latest guidance from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. His administration recommends that at-risk groups of people who receive both shots of the Pfizer vaccine get a booster 6 months after their second shot. Those people eligible to receive a booster shot based on the federal guidance includes people 65 and older, those living in long-term care facilities, people 18 to 64 who have a medical condition that increases their risk of severe COVID-19 infection, and people 18 to 64 who are deemed likely to get exposed to COVID-19 at their job, including those who work in education.
Our schools are making a real strong effort to get there. We're also working on ways to communicate directly to them. That's a lot more digital advertising than others, and trying to get folks to be able to tell their story directly.
The governor also clarified people who are immunocompromised are advised to get a third shot of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine at least 28 days after their second shot. As the Pfizer vaccine nears approval for children as young as age 5, Jefferson County Public Schools may start requiring vaccinations and testing soon. COVID-positive students in Jefferson County have reached over 3,300, and 16,000 have been quarantined so far this school year. JCPS parent Colin Simmons tells Wave 3, mandatory vaccinations may be the best way to keep students protected.
I'm not opposed to it. I do have concerns about the younger children and the lack of study. My daughter is a teenager and she is vaccinated, as am I.
If approved by the FDA, the Pfizer COVID vaccine could be available for children ages 5 to 11 by late October. 7 Fayette County Public Schools began allowing students with COVID-19 exposures to stay in class as long as they test negative and remain asymptomatic yesterday. The strategy, commonly called Test to Stay, is debuting as a pilot program at 5 elementary schools and 2 middle schools. Fayette Superintendent Demetrius Liggins says the program is voluntary and applies only to students who are exposed on campus.
So there still will be some instances should a student have close contact outside of the school environment where they will have to quarantine automatically.
The participating students who are exposed will undergo free testing on campus Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. The program arrives as the district grapples with its first student death linked to the virus. 15-year-old Learning Center sophomore Christopher Gordon passed away last Thursday. For healthcare workers across the nation, fighting COVID-19 is taking an enormous physical, mental, and emotional toll. State COVID-19 data reported Tuesday shows the highest number of cases in the 20 to 29-year-olds, and right behind that is the 30 to 39-year-old group. Health officials say the majority of patients are unvaccinated, but there are some who can get sick even though they have had their shots. Morgan Mellott is a respiratory therapist at the University of Kentucky Healthcare. She tells LEX18 it sometimes only takes a matter of days before patients can develop serious breathing issues.
I feel like for the majority of the patients that I've seen, from their onset of symptoms, somewhere between, 10, 15 days, that we'll see the severity of it. Myself or one of my many coworkers, you know, we can be there at bedside to hold their hand so that at least their family members know that they were not alone at the end.
Melott says the patient population is a lot younger than they were earlier in the pandemic and encourages individuals to use caution to avoid contracting the virus. Appalachian Regional Healthcare has signed an agreement to obtain a Johnson County hospital. WMKY's Lakin Hupp has that story.
Appalachian Regional Healthcare will finalize the purchase of the Paul B. Hall Regional Medical Center in Paintsville within the next 70 days and take control of day-to-day operations starting December 1st. Paul B. Hall is a 72-bed acute care hospital that has served Paintsville and Johnson County since 1988. President and CEO Holly Harris Phillips tells Mountaintop Media she looks forward to welcoming Paul B. Hall and working together to expand healthcare services for southeastern Kentucky. For WMKY News, I'm Lakin Hupp.
The League of Women Voters of Kentucky is holding a series of forums to gather voter input on redistricting after the General Assembly rejected moves to include more public participation. The legislature is under the gun, with 2020 census data arriving late and a 2022 candidate filing deadline currently set for January 7th. Lawmakers will soon hash out new maps that will affect races ranging from the state's six congressional seats all the way down to judicial, city, county, and school board contests. With an independent redistricting commission not currently allowed under Kentucky law, the League of Women Voters has supported either an advisory commission or a series of public hearings, neither of which has won support in the GOP-led General Assembly. Dee Pregliasco is with the League. She says gerrymandering and poorly drawn lines lead to costly lawsuits and an unresponsive government.
Because what we know is when there are these safe districts and there's no competitions, then officials don't feel like they have to compromise. This has led to polarization and to gridlock.
The League will hold a virtual Lexington forum on redistricting October 21st. We'll have a look at more of your region's headlines right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from Coffee Tree Books and the Fuzzy Duck Coffee Shop, promoting literacy and reading in the MSPR listening area since 1978. Coffee Tree Books, where books are ordered every day and special orders can be accommodated, featuring a variety of gifts, locally made crafts, education materials, and yarn shop. A community bookstore located at 159 East Main Street in Moorhead. Coffee Tree Books and the Fuzzy Duck Coffee Shop are open Monday through Saturday. Online Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Lexington officials welcomed the completion of a connector linking popular pedestrian and biking trails over a major city thoroughfare. WUKY's Josh James has more.
And here we are today, able to walk, jog, cycle over Man of War Boulevard.
Mayor Linda Gorton standing in front of the long-awaited Brighton Rail Trail Bridge. The 300-foot span connects the path with Liberty Trail, providing a new route to access a number of neighborhoods and parks. City engineer Doug Burton said the bridge, more than 10 years in the making, is just one piece of a larger puzzle.
And the goal is to connect all of Lexington, not just a couple neighborhoods.
Currently, $53 million in trail projects are in some phase of development. Burton said the total trail master plan still has a long way to go.
We do have 5, 10, 15, 20-year plans to make those connections, but again, it's all about without the dollars, we can't do it. But the mayor's office has been super supportive, as is his council, so as long as that support continues, we'll get it done.
Brighton was the city's first rail trail and is the most heavily traveled shared-use trail in the eastern half of Fayette County. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
And taking a look at the weather forecast for the WMKY listening area, including Fleming, Nicholas, and Wolf counties. Tonight, mostly clear with lows around 59. Tomorrow, sunny with highs near 79. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with lows around 53. Thursday, sunny with highs near 76. Friday, sunny with highs near 74. And Saturday, mostly sunny, highs near 76. On our feature segment this afternoon, an author has written a novel featuring a historic figure from Rowan County. WMKY's Hallie Adams has more.
In 1911, almost 200,000 Kentuckians over the age of 10 did not know how to read or write. Companies from outside Appalachia used the illiteracy to take advantage of residents, many of whom signed away mineral rights to their property without even fully understanding the long-term impact. A lady named Cora Wilson Stewart decided to do something about the practice.
She had this idea. She was the first female superintendent of education for Round County, which was pretty remarkable in itself in this time frame. We're talking about just after the turn of the century. And she was such a dynamic woman. She came up with this idea of opening up these 51 little schoolhouses on moonlit nights for farmers, for wives, for older people to come in and learn how to read and write.
That's Suzanne Wood Fisher, a best-selling award-winning author of fiction and nonfiction books. Fisher first discovered Cora's story while living in California.
I get up really early and I try to hit my word count before the day gets really rolling, and I'm talking about just creative writing. So I listen to a classical music station as I write. And there was this one morning when the radio announcer said, "Today in history, the Moonlight School began with Cora Wilson Stewart." And there was something about that, I don't know, maybe just the poetry of Moonlight School, something kind of caught my ear. And so I stopped what I was doing and I did a little Googling.
Fisher began conducting research on Cora, asking local historians about her impact on the region. Ironically, Fisher has never been to Round County.
I had everything set up, and then the pandemic came, and it just shut it down. And I literally was a week away from on-the-ground research, which I am such a believer in, and it just made me so sad. I actually had to do, like, I think, triple the effort in researching just because I felt sort of, though, almost apologetic. I wasn't on the ground. But I did the best job I could, given the time and the circumstances and all that, but I still hope to get there.
The novel Moonlight Schools tells the true story in a fictionist way through Cora's visiting cousin's Lucy's eyes. Readers will follow Lucy's experience she faces during her stay at Round County. As Lucy becomes more drawn to the natives, readers will be drawn to Lucy's journey to find purpose for her future and closure to her past. Half of the characters in the novel were based off actual people.
The background of Brother Wyatt, his story is kind of interesting. But there was a young man who was at a school function that Cora had attended, and he sang a beautiful ballad, and those country ballads go on and on and on, the verses and the poetry and the romance of the song. And afterwards, she went up to him and said, "You know, I think we could look at getting some of these published if you have more of these songs." And he said, "I have hundreds of them, but they're all in my head because I can't read and write."
Fisher wants to spread Cora's story and continue to encourage others to learn. It also teaches readers to never take the ability of reading and writing for granted.
Well, the book, I hope you'll maybe pick up and read. It's a really lovely read because it takes you right into that time frame, and I think it's eye-opening for so many reasons. And if you like historical fiction, I did my very best to try to, you end the book learning a lot, which is the best part of historical fiction. But I guess when I look at Cora's life, she had this phrase, says, "Each one teach one," and that idea of making a difference, and that's what I think is the best gift of all.
For WMKY News, I'm Hallie Adams reporting. Support for MSPR comes from Papa John's in the Patrick Center, Moorhead. Papa John's made-to-order specialty pizzas include The Works, Garden Fresh, Zesty Italian Trio, and Fiery Buffalo Chicken. Side item menu offers papadillas, chicken wings, garlic knots, and double chocolate chip brownies. Curbside pickup or delivery in Moorhead and Round County. Papa John's phone number is 784-3551 and online at papajohns.com.
It's 80 degrees here on the beautiful campus of Moorhead State University. I'm your Mountain Edition host, Tanner Boyd, here with Rachel Turner, and we're coming to you live from the Larry Netherton Studio here in the historic Breckenridge Hall. Sarah Mead has a look at sports coming up, but first I want to say thank you. We are so glad you can spend time with us on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon.
A member of Moorhead State Volleyball now has over a dozen Ohio Valley Conference honors. For WMKY Sports, I'm Sarah Mead. For volleyball graduate student Olivia Lohmeyer, 13 is a lucky number. Lohmeyer has been named Ohio Valley Conference Co-Offensive Player of the Week, the 13th time in her career winning the weekly honor. Despite a pair of setbacks at Austin Peay, Lohmeyer still averaged 4.5 kills per set and added 3 blocks in 10 digs on the weekend. In Friday's five-setter, she piled up 25 kills on a career-high 76 swings. She returns Saturday to knock in 16 more kills with two blocks. Associate head coach Kristen Becker-McBride says Lohmeyer accomplished much of this outside her normal placement.
We had her playing six rotations lined up as the right side, and we're using her out of the back row. Some of that had to do with the fact that we went to a modified 5-1 because we had Bridget Bessler, who we had just playing in the back row to start because of her thumb. And then we had Brenna Balmer in the front row. And from a substitution standpoint, we needed to have a six rotation player, and Liv really stepped up to that challenge.
The Eagles are back at home this weekend for an OVC twofer against Murray State, Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 11 a.m. The Rowan County Senior High School volleyball team is back to work after a difficult week for the team. In all, the Vikings lost 7 games last week. Head coach Steve Walters says it's been a long time since he last faced that statistic, but that's part of the risk when building a schedule for the team. His girls travel across the state for various tournaments throughout the season in hopes of facing difficult opponents and getting better.
You can stay around home and you can kind of pick and choose opponents, and you can get those 28, 29, 30 victory seasons, but is it really going to help you in the long run? You know, I mean, I guess there is a certain confidence that you can get by you know, kind of jacking up your wins there in regular season. But I want my girls to be battle-tested.
The team only has one game this week. They will be at home Thursday to take on Bath County at 7 o'clock. The Morehead State University women's golf team came out on top in their most recent tournament. WMKY's Tanner Boyd reports.
Going into the final round, down by 10 strokes, Morehead State women's golf rallied behind a collection of top 15 finishers to win the Briar Ridge Invitational in Schererville, Indiana. The Eagles improved in every single round of the 54-hole tournament, despite the second round being suspended due to darkness on Sunday night, carding a 927 in three rounds. The team led the field in pars, with Mackenzie Neal and Olivia Hensley tying for the individual lead with 33 apiece. The Eagles also had the most birdies with 27 and had the best scoring average on par fives throughout the tournament. Morehead State returns to the course October 10th for a three-day tournament hosted by College of Charleston. For WMKY Sports, I'm Tanner Boyd.
Morehead State's soccer coach says he likes the aggressiveness he's been seeing from the team. The Eagles tied 1-1 on the road Sunday in a game loaded with impressive stats. Among them was MSU's 23 attempts at the Panther goal. Coach Warren Lipka says he wanted to see more attacks on the team, but their performance over the weekend was even better than what he had hoped for.
Usually if you can get anywhere from 10 to 15 around that area, you're doing decent. When you get into the 20s, that means that you're getting numbers forward. And I think both of them ran into some good goalkeeping yesterday. But like I said, taking a point on the road is really important. It's crucial because keeping them from gaining three and us taking home one is a good deal.
Next up for Morehead State is a home contest. They will continue OVC play against Tennessee Tech Thursday at 6 p.m. The Rowan County Senior High School football team fell in their district opener Friday, but they didn't make things easy for Scott High. It was a low-scoring game for both teams, with the contest wrapping up 17-7. Viking coach Kelly Ford says while there were some costly mistakes on offense, it was a game where the defense stood out.
Scott High had two D1 receivers that, our secondary did a really good job on those guys and competed and knocked balls down. I know having Lewis Hayes back for the first time in a while with a broken arm, he really played with a lot of intensity. So really, really proud of our defense, the way they played. And, offensively, just really couldn't get anything going.
Rowan is back at home this weekend to host Holmes. Kickoff Friday is slated for 7:30. This week is crunch time for the Morehead State University football team. The Eagles open up conference play at home this weekend against longtime rival Dayton. They had a break in games last week, and head coach Rob Tenier says that gave the team plenty of time to apply the final touches after a hard-fought preseason.
The thing that I mentioned this week is, you know, we played a really competitive non-conference schedule. The reason we played those games is to prepare us for this stretch of games. Our players have really handled it really well. Obviously, we did not want to be 1-2 at this point. But in reality, our players have practiced hard. They prepared well. We've had good game plans all 3 weeks.
Kickoff against the Flyers Saturday is set for 2 o'clock. And that's going to do it for sports. For WMKY, I'm Sarah Mead.
Bud Luke has a look at the stock report right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from the Ruth Hunt Candy Company, celebrating 100 years of business in 2021. Ruth Hunt's long-term success is proven by using fine ingredients and traditional methods in making their confections. Ruth Hunt is Kentucky proud with traditional candies, Woodford Reserve bourbon balls, and Blue Mondays. Sweetening the distance between you and your loved ones. Ruth Hunt Candies in Mount Sterling, Lexington, and anytime online at RuthHuntCandy.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Robert W. Baird. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. U.S. stocks fell sharply with tech names dragging down the broader markets as Treasury yields traded near three-month highs and lawmakers in Washington continued their budget stalemate. And the Dow Industrials did show a loss of 1.6%, finishing at 34,299.99. The S&P 500 was down 2% at 4,352.64. And the NASDAQ was down 2.78% at 14,546.68, so the broader S&P and NASDAQ certainly affected by the weakness in big tech. The 10-year U.S. Treasury yield continued its speedy climb, rising as high as 1.56% today as investors bet the Fed would carry through on its promise to curb its emergency bond-buying stimulus as inflation jumps. The 10-year yield has reversed dramatically to the highest level since June, since the Fed signaled last week it would taper its $120 billion in monthly bond purchases soon. And the 10-year rate was as low as 1.29% last week, and it was actually as low as 1.13% last month. And so certainly a dramatic move up in interest rates, and that's certainly having an effect on the markets as a whole. As mentioned, tech shares fell today because of the rapid rise in rate and the effect that that has on the higher growth groups. And Facebook, Alphabet, and Amazon shares all lost more than 3%, and large chip stocks struggle with NVIDIA, sliding more than 4%. Also weighing on sentiment was a budget showdown in Washington. Senate Republicans blocked a House-passed bill Monday that would have funded the government into December and suspended the debt ceiling until December of 2022. Congress must approve government funding by Friday to avoid a shutdown, and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned Congress in a letter that lawmakers need to raise the debt limit by October 18th to avoid a government default. And, of course, President Biden's massive infrastructure plan also faces an uncertain future. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was CSX down 6 cents at 30.50, Marathon Petroleum down 58 cents at 62.51, PPL down 14 cents at 28.22, U.S. Bancorp down 68 cents at 60.42, Humana down 6 cents at 3.95, and AppHarvest was down 27 cents to finish at 6.53. Reporting from the Ashland offices of Robert W. Baird, this is Bud Luke.
And that's it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. Today we had help from Leanne Akers, Paul Hitchcock, Greg Jenkins, Hallie Adams, Lissa White, Sarah Mead, Keneally Roberts, Lakin Hupp, Ethan Jenkins, and Rachel Turner. WUKY's Josh James and Hilliard Lyons' Bud Luke. Our theme music is composed and performed by Allison Brown. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, Kentucky.